Voilà, donc là maintenant j'ai arrêté. Voilà, c'est ton podcast maintenant.
Ok.
Tu peux y aller.
So let's start in English.
Let's do it.
It's so weird. Welcome, Benjamin.
Thank you.
Welcome back, actually.
Thank you, Ophélie. Third time.
Third time.
I'm starting to be a celebrity of your podcast.
Yeah. I posted on Insta that I was meeting a famous comedian today to do a recording.
Thank you so much for the flattery. Did you see my new poster?
I did not. Which one?
Because it's called Digital Daddy.
No.
Yes, I rebranded my show and now I feel invincible. Sometimes you just need a new poster.
For real?
Yeah. And a
I
new
love
title.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
So same show, same content.
Same show, the content is the same. And actually, the title fits better because it is, you know, so it's like digital daddy, meaning like old school digitized life. Plus, it has a lot to do with family dynamics being broken by the digital world. So I think it's perfect. And it has this kind of like cheeky vibe to it. Who's your digital daddy? It's me.
Yeah,
I have traumatized Ophélie now.
No, I was just trying to make a parallel with, you know, Zaddy, digital daddy. You know, like, you know how we say the word Zaddies?
Zaddy?
I think it's younger women who date older men.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
And I thought we call them sugar babies.
Maybe, yeah, Zaddy? We can look it up.
Okay.
And so I was just thinking about that, but it's a great title.
Sure. That should be your, you know, we should do a double bill show. I have my show would be Digital Daddy and your show will be like Zaddy.
That's obviously what I think about. No, I'm a cougar, so I'm not in.
Yeah, you date younger, right? Yes. If I remember correctly.
So that, but I know it's a thing, you know. Yeah.
It's not your thing, but it is
not
a thing.
My thing.
So sorry to all the daddies out there. Yeah, hopefully, it's not for grab.
Yeah, not yet. Anyway,
but
maybe
if you're Gen Z.
Yeah. No, actually, I was telling you just before we started recording, I started celibacy this year. So no dating for a whole year. That's what...
How do you get talked into doing something like this?
I what chose
kind of,
myself.
What kind of new age bullshit? Like post-feminist? I'm going to be... Because look... I get it.
He has such like, serious expression on his face right now. He's like, look.
I have chosen also in the past to be like, okay, I'm done with relationships. I'm not done, but I need to take a break because it just gets worse and worse. So I need to step back.
Yeah.
But never, ever did I tell myself it's going to be a year and I'm not going to date. And this is ridiculous. I'm telling you right now. Well, you said to me...
But it's not much. It's Switzerland. You know, it's kind of like the natural unfolding of things.
This is stupid.
Okay.
I am urging you right now to reconsider, like to understand how this decision is not good.
For me.
Yes.
Or for who?
For you. And I mean, of course, for all the...
For all the Gen
Z. For all the young men who are going to miss out on this cougar. But also, like, of course, like, decide, you know, to take a break or whatever, but don't do, like, for a year because it will bring you nothing.
No, 1 year, 1 year.
No, 1 year is stupid.
So
don't
how
put
long?
A, don't
how
put
long?
A date. Don't put a date. Just
I'm on a break now.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
All the guys listening now, thank me later.
Yeah, I guess there are so many of them out there listening to this right now.
Yes, who are 20 years younger than me. Who was the youngest?
Recently now, he was 28. Okay. Almost 10 years younger than me. I'm 37.
I mean, this is always like a surprise when I hear this. If you're listening this in audio, you cannot understand what I'm saying, but in video, you will agree... She doesn't look.
You cannot see the youth on my face. Yeah, I trick many. Okay.
Okay.
So actually, this podcast is not about my dating
life.
Oh,
damn, I was trying to do a diversion.
So the reason we're here today,
yes,
is actually because I saw your shows last year.
Yes.
And I saw the one at the Beast, and it was the same show. Mm-hmm. And before, it was called Control Alt Ben.
Yes.
So the now digital daddy, yes, was called Control, yes, Alt Ben. Yeah. And it was still, you were still working on it.
Yes.
And you were trying it out at the Beast in, yeah, the spring, I think it,
yeah,
was.
Yeah.
And then I saw you in the fall at Tabouretli.
Yes.
Basel.
Yeah.
And then that was the show in, yes, German.
Correct. Yeah.
And I saw then how much it evolved, and that's what we're going to talk about,
okay,
today.
Yes.
Because I do this series on creativity, right?
So yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, dating could be creative, but I get it. We need
No, totally. We can come back to it after if we have time. It, yes, is the best topic. It,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, the show is
yes.
Okay, tell me about your creative process. Tell me about the rewriting, the trying it out, figuring out what worked, what didn't, and then having this end product. And then also we'll talk about how you felt afterwards and your future plans also, or current plans, or something totally.
All right, so there's like 15 questions, so where should I start?
Okay, so
creative process.
How was the how was the process in general first,
yes,
from spring to,
yes,
fall?
So I have a philosophy that I try to accept as much as possible the things that I do not control, including the quality of the stuff that I produce. You know, and it's easy to say like in a mic, but it's also actually what creates a lot of suffering when I write is that I constantly think of my favorite authors like Victor Hugo, you know, Molière, Voltaire, and I put some kind of expectations on myself that it's not worth writing if it's not like that. And of course, it's not like, yeah, that. So at some point, what has helped me, and I'm not saying I completely cured from it, but this is how I have, you know, I become my creative process. Quantity is, yeah, is my process.
Yeah.
So you know, so I write every day a certain number of words, eventually there's something good coming out of it, and then I take that idea and I try to explore it further. But again, like not trying to make it good. You know, just trying to have as many ideas as possible and you know, still trying to make, okay, let's try to make a joke, try to make a comparison that is funny, something, but not be, you know, if I made it the focus of my session, then I wouldn't do anything. So the focus is like quantity. Yeah. And then I bring something to the stage and then from that, you know, I probably throw another 50% because the audience is like, nah, this is not funny. Or I'm like, actually, you know what? Like, I had a wrong idea of myself when I wrote it, because when I say it out loud,
yeah,
it just doesn't feel good. There's something off. So, you know, and then so through this process of elimination, the gold is filtered and you know, through what I keep. So for my first solo, I did this. Without any kind of direction, I might have told you this in the last episode that I did, which we did in French, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first solo that I did, I just went with whatever came in my mind, and then, you know, then I try to put together everything into one story, which eventually I found it, but it was very like painful because none of these bits were meant to fit together with some other bits. Then for this show, I started with a theme. I did the same process, but then when I would start writing, I would decide, okay, like what do I have to say about this subtopic of this theme? And eventually I found a story, but it was again now for my third solo show, which I will do, you know, after this one. I will actually start from the story from the beginning, because it was a mistake to either just go random and find a story after, or find a theme and then get the story after. Like, I will just go with the story from the beginning. But yeah, so process in general is quantity. You know, I am on stage 3 to 4 times a week trying stuff. Then when it gets to a certain level of quality, the open mic, I bring it to the paid shows. And then in the paid shows, even, you know, some the paid audiences, they tell you like, this is not that good. So like you can hear it, you know, because ultimately you want to have like if you want to, or at least my philosophy is that if I want to break into comedy, I have to please to people who pay tickets. And so, you know, so they are slightly different than the open mic scene. So then, you know, so first open mic, then paid mix shows where this is like another level of quality control. And then
they expect then more, gets you it feel?
In the solo show.
When they pay, the people expect more.
It depends, because sometimes audiences that have paid are more reactive because they're like, well, I paid, so I want to have a good time. No, but they expect, you know, like at the open mic, you can be just, you can say really ridiculous stuff and you can, you know, you can try and say things that are like, you can explore dangerous, you know, ideas or even just like, or topics that usually aggravate people. Then it doesn't mean that, you know, I am still like in the show, sometimes I'm rude, sexual, but it's, you know, it's different than, I think open mic, it's a little bit, I don't know, like if you bring a risky topic to a paid audience, it needs to be a little bit crafted. This is my experience.
Okay, thank you. I'll have more stand-up related questions after, but
sure.
Yeah. So, and then you bring it to a paid audience.
Yeah.
And then?
And then, you know, so then it goes into the solo show, but then even the solo show evolves. And I would say that once you have your solo, the edits are harder to do, because anything that you brought to the solo show, you think you have a good reason you brought it there. And, you know, you did it because audiences were laughing there in the past, so you live in that memory. And it's very hard to just say, no, it doesn't work, and cut it.
Yeah.
And find something new.
Yeah.
But you got to do it.
That's pain.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it's pain, but it's also, it's hard to make that decision because it doesn't make sense. It's it makes sense. You know, it's like, well, I can see this bit is not working in the solo, but it worked so much before, so I must have done something wrong. And like, so maybe, you know, if I say it better or with a different tone, it will work. But sometimes it just doesn't work.
You watch your videos afterwards?
I try to. Yeah. I'm not very disciplined with it. Some people are much more disciplined than I am. But usually, yeah.
So that was to bring it to the first solo.
Oh no! And then, sorry. And then I was talking about the refinement from the first solo.
The refinement from the first solo.
Okay. Yeah. So in mix shows, you do another filtering where you bring things to your solo. And then from your solo tryouts, or even, you know, as the show evolves, you have to make decisions. Unless your show is perfect from the beginning, but I haven't had that luck.
But your solo, how many times you did? Because I thought you did it only twice. I know you did it.
Yeah, no, I did it twice in tryouts, but, you know, then people come and, I mean, you know, it's not like Molière where you cannot change the text. You can. You're allowed to.
Yeah, you changed it a lot, actually, from what I saw in a few months. Mm. A lot.
Did I?
And in another language. I saw it the first time in English and then it was in German.
It didn't seem that it was so much, but, I mean, you...
Yeah. I found it quite interesting.
Ah, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize.
You just tried it and then you just intuitively, or from the feedback you got from the audience, changed it, or?
Yeah, so then, you know, when you rehearse it, you kind of, you put yourself back into the situation and you're like, oh, I don't like that part. Or sometimes you have inspiration for something that would go in there, so you write it, and then you try to fit it in and see. And then if you do, you take out some other stuff. You know, for example, even I think maybe probably before the tryout you saw. Cause so basically I built this show mostly by going on Sunday nights to Is This Anything in Basel, because it's the only open mic where you can test 15 to 20 minutes of jokes. So I would go religiously and bomb my ass off for 15 to 20 minutes, and it was so painful. But you know, every time there was at least something that. Yeah. That I could, you know, out of it. And then, you know, because out of that, I remember I have the story of my first time in an internet cafe, which happened at the Virgin Megastore. And so in the very first iterations of the show, I would talk about the Virgin Megastore in itself and how much, like, it's, you know, at the time you think that, like, these big chain made you believe that if you buy products of culture, CDs, books, etc., you'd be interesting and sexy, and you know, and that's why it's called the Virgin Megastore, because if you fall into that, you remain a virgin for a long time. And I, you know, I was, and so that worked really well in the beginning, you know, from is this anything, and then the first iteration, like when I would go to mix shows and do 20 minutes, but then at some point it just stopped. Working, so I don't even, and I don't know why. So I don't even think this was even in the tryout you saw in Basel. I think I might have already taken it out.
But so basically, you rehearsed at those open mics where you can do longer bits.
Yeah,
and that's how you rewrote, or not rewrote, but like perfected the show.
Yeah, and I'm very happy because if I get like a spot in a mix show. Anywhere between 15 and 30, where you're supposed to come with killer material. You know, I used to bring only like, you know, the Bunch Detten jokes and my son watching things on his iPad. But now I bring parts of Digital Daddy, and it like, and I can close a show with it. Like, I'm really happy. Like, it's got to a standard. At least, you know, not the whole show is like that, unfortunately. Like, I wish. You know, it's an evolving.
Yeah.
But at least I know that I have 20 to 30 minutes that I can bring that is like killer material that I can bring to a mix show where I'm asked to close. So it's cool.
And how did you feel after the Tabouretli? Because I think for you it was quite cool, quite a big deal, no? If I can say that, to perform there. Maybe not.
No, it was a big deal to perform there, but I don't think I'm going to be reinvited soon, unfortunately.
You say that, but...
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, the guy hasn't replied back to my email, so...
Maybe he was busy.
It's show business.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I didn't manage to sell a lot of tickets. Mm. Some of it is, I think, the branding of the previous show was not exciting enough. And so... Of course, it's not the only thing. But anyway, and then I just thought I thought the vibe was really weird. Like, I don't understand why the audience was so old.
Tabouretli.
I've been in... my first solo, it was a lot more younger people.
There.
Yeah, or at least, you know, maybe younger or people my age. But not people 20 years older than me.
Okay, so it was really the evening...
Yeah, no, but it's probably, you know, I don't know. So because I didn't sell a lot of tickets, they probably emailed their mailing list to give free tickets to all their database, and a lot of them came. I don't think they're necessarily the best audience for this show. Like, because I think people my generation who had internet as teenagers.
They cannot relate.
Exactly, they cannot relate because they had internet as already quite, you know, full grown-up adults.
Yeah.
Whereas when you had it with a teenager, it's impossible to think about internet without thinking about eroticism. And so... So, you know, so I talk about it and I don't think it shocks my people.
Yeah.
But I think older people maybe. I don't know. Yeah. And then maybe it was not good enough. Maybe, I don't know.
But did you, for you, it was still really cool to be there.
Yes, I mean, it's very cool to be in Taboretli. I want bigger audiences and young. Or at least my age, please.
Young people. Yeah.
No, yeah. No, but I mean, it's not like I don't, you know.
I think it's more so that they can resonate, right? If you are not the same generation, it's really hard to then laugh because you just don't get it.
Yeah, but for example, this audience, they took quite some time to loosen up. You know, yeah. Normally in this, at least, you know, I designed it so that the first 15 minutes are pretty strong.
Hmm.
And I was like, wow, like I had to push a lot.
You also didn't have anyone opening, right?
No.
Usually they warm up a little.
I don't believe in that.
No?
I go cold. No, I believe in that. But, you know, my solo shows are an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm. It's too long.
So I'm not going to...
Yeah.
You know, so with the break, people are there. And you start 10 minutes late.
Yeah.
People are there for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to add 10, 15 minutes on top.
Yeah.
No, so I'm supposed to warm them up.
Mm-hmm. But maybe it's, I don't know, you know, I'm not in the business, but...
No, but it was good, and I hope I convinced them to come back. It just doesn't seem like he's re-inviting me.
Mm-hmm. For now.
For now, yeah. C'est la vie.
I had a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Both times.
Thanks.
I also grew up, you know, with the chats and the chat rooms, and yeah, it was... You brought me back. You made me time travel, you know?
Ah, but for example, the chat room stuff, it's gone. I think it was gone already in the...
It's possible.
In Taboretli.
Or way less.
Yeah.
But maybe you still talked about it a little bit.
Maybe I still talked about it. So it was, this was something that was hard to cut, for example.
Mm.
Because... You know, sometimes, I mean, I wanted to write about that theme because I wanted to say some things about what it was like. And then I remember that when I was being confronted by an idea that was completely different from what my culture had given me, which was that in World War II, everybody behaved like a hero. Yeah.
But I think this you talk about, no?
Well, I think in Taboretli, not anymore.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I don't remember. It's 3 months ago. Right. But so important things are hard to leave out.
Yeah.
Maybe it comes back in Digital Daddy.
Digital Daddy.
We don't want to spoil it. So where is Digital Daddy gonna play?
So right now I'm building. For sure in Lausanne.
Okay.
For sure in Zurich. Still, I'm planning in Bern. I'm planning again in Basel. I'm reaching out to many venues. No, I want to go out with it. It took a while for me to get to that stage where I wanted to go out with it. Now I'm happy.
And did so? Tell us more about why did the name change so much? The way you feel about it.
Well, so like I maybe should not have ignored my feeling in the beginning, which was that like I love Control Alt Band, and it was actually my audience who chose it. Like I gave them 4 options.
Oh, yeah.
But they're my audience.
Mm.
So I was just more like not convinced by the like it's once I saw the poster of, you know, the guy with the head in the computer, which was my idea.
Yeah.
And the thing looking like Windows 95. I don't know, something felt not quite right, but it was typical of, you know, me be like, well, you know, let's tick the goals and, you know, so let's keep moving. But I should have maybe like listened to myself a little bit and be like, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I felt I was committed.
Mm.
But then I see like I just have a problem selling the shows. I think people who come see the shows mostly like it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I have people who have really adverse reaction to it. So, you know, in Basel, a couple left in the mid. Yeah, there was one table that was empty. But same in Zurich, in the Zurich English. When I did the premiere, like a theater director wrote to me spontaneously to tell me like how vulgar it was and shocking. Yeah. Like, and so.
It's so nuts.
Well, and you know, what's funny is like, after the English show in Zurich, oh no, it was actually not a German show. So that show where this theater director was, the mother of a friend of my kids, you know, who's now one of my friends, she came to see me after and she says, "Oh, what's nice with you is that, you know, you're not, you don't do vulgar topics, or when you do, it's very,
it's,
you know,
it's subtle
and everything." I mean, but you know, I do talk about Alessandro Volta getting a rod of iron in his ass while he invents electricity. But
yeah,
but I know, like, for me, it was not so crazy.
No.
But there are some people, I don't know what, they just completely averse to it, and it's like, so I have had the strongest reaction. But I'm not gonna cut it out.
No.
Like, I think it's funny.
Oh my god.
But anyway, so now I think the title doesn't, you know, isn't attractive to anyone, like Control Alt Ben. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't know me, like, and I think even just the poster, like a comedy poster should be like black background or red background or like something vivid. I don't know if I compare, you know, it's something in this blue Windows 95 blue, it didn't work. So, and I just needed a second life into it for me to be motivated, because otherwise I would just like, you know, fuck it, let's just move on to a new one.
Because you thought about that right after the show.
I think about quitting comedy quite often.
Well, let's talk about that, because I asked other comedians and they were like, yeah, no, I never really thought of it. You think about it? Like, they think, even if they think about it, it's not an option. They know.
Well, you know, maybe that's my thing is that
I have options.
Well, no, but maybe that's the problem, is that I'm too good at keeping a normal job, and well, I say that after having been fired a year ago, but
You could do, of course, things, but...
You know what? I've actually now reached a stage now where in my mind I'm not quitting, no matter what.
Okay, well, so not quitting.
But it took me a while to get there. And because it was, you know, it was such ego expectations of how it should go, and comparing myself to people who are much more successful. And you know, I mean... I don't have a problem with people who are more successful, but people who started with me who are more successful, this is not acceptable. And so, <Yeah. laughs> so, you know, there's some pain in that. And I'm not like, I think it's okay to be jealous, but not, you know, like not in a way that, you know, jealous. I'm like,
as long as it inspires you to keep
going. Or just, you know, how about being fucking honest and acknowledging that it hurts your pride a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it doesn't take away from actually being genuinely happy that for the success of others and in a way showing the way or. But anyway, so.
No, it's good to talk about it.
So so there's, I think there's often some pain associated, or, you know, typically it's like, you know, I have made this move to like, okay, now I'm committing to creativity. I did this when I'm 20.
It's like me.
Okay. Like, you know, I'm not going to business school. I'm going to art school. I'm going to commit to this.
You did that?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. Then.
Film school. No.
Film school. Yeah. Then age of 23, I'm like, I'm committing to stand up in Paris.
Yeah.
You know, and then in 2020, you know, I'm leaving the big company that I was working in, and I'm committing to comedy, then went back to a job, then was let go this time, but I was like, fuck it, I'm committing to comedy.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I think I'm most likely, I'm going to take a job soon.
Same.
You know, yeah. But it's like, It's okay. Like,
yeah, it's okay also.
Now, you know, this time, like all the four previous times, like the going back to a job, something, career, was extremely painful and felt like a massive failure. Now I think this time I'm like, okay, well,
it's okay.
Here's what I've learned about entrepreneurship this time around and about creativity.
What have you learned? You want to share? You don't have to share everything, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's so specific that I don't know if this is going to...
Or in general.
No, I think, you know, in entrepreneurship, what I've learned is that if there are, you know, the emotional aspects are very strong because you're the only one who can believe in your idea. Mm. Nobody else does. Mm. And so if there is anything where, you know, any question that is causing you to not completely believe in it, you need to address it and find answers to this question. Mm. And I think, you know, I lingered for many months not answering questions because I thought that if I did, I will find out that, you know,
you're not supposed to do
the
that.
The terrible truth about myself, that I'm not supposed to do that. Whereas, you know, like, so for example, are we connected on LinkedIn? I don't think
no.
so. Okay. So I launched this Crave Speaking business, which is public speaking coaching.
Mm.
And, you know, for many months and probably years, because, you know, I never really addressed the why don't I feel like going out in the world and talking to people about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah.
About it.
So, for example.
And I'm like, that could be really interesting for me, actually, personally. Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't able to actually say, how do I actually coach? Like, what do I coach people? You know, not just, you cannot just say, oh, you know, he's on stage a lot and has made it to television and wow. And, you know, but actually, like, what can I transmit to people and to who? And you know, I really, because I worked with a couple of people who are freelancers in marketing, they forced me to go through this.
Yeah, yeah. The why of
And
things.
Actually, once I did, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and then after that, I started to have my first clients.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a very specific type of clients that are perfectionists.
Mm-hmm.
So usually engineers, scientists,
corporate,
tech people, but not just.
Mm.
But let's say that for marketing, these are easy to target because you can look at their job title and, you know, like people who deal with this perfectionism. And I really have tools that I have learned for 20 years, always comparing yourself to Victor Hugo or Voltaire to push through it. So, but now when I have an inquiry and I get on a call with somebody, I'm actually very excited and I can talk about it with passion.
Yeah.
But it was like, gosh, like if I had just listened to this gut feeling of like there's something not quite right. And it's kind of like the same with this poster, and this show title. Like I wish. And then another thing is, you know, Digital Daddy, actually, I didn't come up with this name. So I was backstage. So first of all, a few weeks ago, a younger Swiss-German comedian, it's quite famous, she asked me about my solo show. And she was like, oh, your solo show about informatik. And I was like,
genau.
I was like, really? Like, this is the impression that I'm giving? So actually for me, this was the last straw, was that feedback of like this 20-year-old something was like, I'm doing a show about informatics.
Yeah.
And I was, I was like, I got to do something. So I was backstage at a Swiss German show and I was telling people like I have issues with the title and, you know, and I started to say some ideas and then some ideas flew around the table. And then one guy said, oh, why don't you do Digital Daddy? But I kept it, but I wasn't convinced on the spot. And it was only later, like when I compared all of this, Digital Daddy really sticked out.
Mm-hmm. It's catchy.
No, but did you see the poster?
No, I didn't.
Okay, you got it.
It makes you. It made me think. Like, you know, you can do so many connections.
You're gonna have to like.
Gonna have to come see it. Oh my god! Oh yeah, it's another vibe. But
now she's reconsidering her attraction to younger people. So it is, but actually, it and is. Also because it's another vibe,
you play a little bit. With
then that. I feel I'm less ashamed to go with those moments in the show when it becomes sexual, because also this is the poster,
and I'm
like, great,
yeah, it was the right connection in my brain.
So yeah.
So digital daddy, and what about the content creation?